The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Kia ora tātou, this is Merv Manhire. We're taking a little break over the summer, and so we thought we'd re-up some of our favourite episodes. This one, in which I, Merv, got together with my friends Merv Thomas and Merv Lee Mather to discuss Merv, who was the mystery caller on the Marcus Lush's talkback show on News Talk ZB. Anyway, it kind of marked a particular moment in a tumultuous year, and we think it's worth having another listen to. Thanks to Flick and Spinoff members for keeping Gone by Lunchtime alive.
Merv, it's Marcus. Welcome and good evening.
Oh, Marcus, it's Merv from Manorai. We're just a bit confused because there's this photo of Ben Thomas. He's standing in Auckland Central, but he's sent a photograph, and he's in a zorb filled with urine, and he's going over the Bombay Hills.
Kia ora tātou, this is Gone by Lunchtime. My name is Toby Manhire. To my left is Annabelle Lee Mather. Morena.
Morena, kia ora,
Merv. It's 10 a.m. on Wednesday, and also Ben Thomas.
Morning, everybody. I've been up since 5:30.
Oh, well done.
I did TVNZ.
Did you?
Yeah, I was late. I had to massage the bags under my eyes. I had to do a lymphatic treatment on my face to be TV ready.
What were you talking about?
Auckland Central.
Oh, great. Well, we should talk about that too. And we will, because they now at last have a new candidate. Among other topics, we'll talk about the Labour launch of the campaign. We'll talk about how National responds. We'll talk about Shane Jones and New Zealand First. We'll talk about buses and other things yet to come. Thank you to Flick Electric. Thank you to Spinoff members. Please subscribe to this podcast. Please like this podcast. Please sort of get it, hire an airplane and do a banner behind the plane with the podcast.
Go to iTunes and review Caucus and Tick Tick and give them one star.
Don't do that. We're collegiate.
It's okay to do that. That's okay. I can do that.
Make your voice heard. This is an election year. Did you see Caucus have copied us? This year they've brought on a Māori and a PR person.
Well, you and Annabelle melded into one.
Into Scott Campbell.
Beautiful zorb. Yeah. We love all of our fellow political podcasters. Very exciting news is that policy launches tomorrow on the Spinoff. That will enable you to compare all the different policy categories and the candidates in the seats. Exciting. New edition is actually going to be amazing. I'm very excited about it. The Labour Party launched their campaign on Saturday at the Town Hall. It was a kind of repeat of the 2017 edition. Slightly less giddy, I thought. Did you keep an eye on it, Ben?
Yeah, I thought it was a bit downbeat.
But downbeat?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the shadow of COVID and a global plague hanging over proceedings. But you're right, not the sort of rapturous kind of entrance in as 2017, you know, when we were riding the peak of Jacinda mania.
I mean, it's Jerry mania these days, and we'll look forward to that at the National Party launch on the following weekend. But it was, I mean, you say it wasn't rapturous. It kind of was, actually. I mean, I thought it was a bit more slick. It was almost as though last time around they couldn't quite believe it, you know, and had that kind of the enthusiasm of the new act that's emerging, and you can't believe that you're getting to see them the first time they play in the Brixton Academy or whatever.
Well, I think you're right. Now everyone definitely believes now.
Yeah.
It was an audience of true believers, but it seemed a bit more like a standard sermon than, you know, kind of speaking in tongues and channeling the social democratic gods.
There was a lot of audio visual stuff going on. There was a kind of a Courtney Cena Meredith poem, performance poem, which kind of ended in this sort of incantation of let's keep moving, let's keep moving. There was Tammy Nielsen. Clark Gayford was actually very funny, to give him credit.
He was funny, but I wanted some more weird Jacinda facts.
Right. I saw you tweet that.
We're right. About 3 years on from the infamous midnight almond milk story.
Fact.
Clark did mention that Jacinda is never allowed to see anything he writes before he delivers it. And
I think Jacinda said
Said that, yes. And yet that was clear from 2017 when the spouses or the partners were asked to contribute something to the Herald on Sunday about a week before the election.
Mm.
And Mary English's column was clearly written by Stephen Joyce. And Clark Gayford's column had clearly not been seen by anyone except Clark Gayford, and had this incredible story about Jacinda and how she cared so much for other people that one night she couldn't sleep because Clark didn't have any milk for the morning tea. So she got up in the middle of the night and soaked almonds for his tea that morning. And he said, it was the best cup of tea I've ever had, and I hate almond milk. It's like, why not get up 10 minutes earlier and go to the dairy and get the milk that Clark likes?
You think about that a lot.
I think about it a lot. One of
You've
the things
told that story several times on this podcast. It's captured your imagination, that story, eh? It's resonated.
There is something. It's almost like he's kind of going to do
some
it.
Some almond milk.
He's
going to
turn it into
do.
His masterwork, and he's going to sort of approach it from every different perspective, you know, like a kind of trilogy of feature-length films about the almond milk. First, Jacinda's perspective, then Clark's perspective, and then the almond milk's perspective.
That's
what,
right. The
what
kind of midnight
I want to know
sun,
is what did she do with the grounds of the almond milk? Because if it was Madame Davidson, she would have like turned them into some sort of renewable fuel. Oh. Did Jacinda just carelessly dispose of them, or were they mulched? What became of those almond grounds? That's what people want to know.
If anyone from the Prime Minister's staff or family or household knows the answer to that question, please send it directly to the police station where Ben will be.
But anyway, we just need some more weird Jacinda facts. Nothing strange has come out about the Prime Minister since the story about how she repeatedly apologised to the man who ran over her cat. And I think we're due for one.
Paddles! Oh my God! Can we take a moment just to remember Paddles as we head into this next election? I mean, he was a pivotal player. He was what that baby yak was this year.
Was he? Oh, all right. 40 days out from the election in 2020, and what we're going to do now is just have a moment of silence for Paddles. Annabelle, did you pay attention to the launch on the weekend? Audrey Young noted, I thought, quite perceptively, that there were many fewer references to Labour in the campaign launch speech from Ardern. And because in a way, you don't need that anymore. And then as others, such as Henry Cook, pointed out, the kind of centrepiece policy, which was an expansion of a sort of business subsidy scheme, business for employees, to bring on unemployed people, that was a 2012 National Party that's now been kind of turbo boosted, was the campaign launch, as far as you could tell, a pitch for that kind of median voter?
I have to admit that I didn't catch the launch. I work weekends.
Oh.
However, we did have Minister Megan Woods on the program and Willie Jackson, who shared a ride to the launch. So I feel like I had like a connection to it, even though I couldn't observe it firsthand myself. Mm-hmm. And both of them had interesting interviews, if I could just promote my show for a minute, We had Megan Woods on as the Minister of Energy to talk about the energy pricing review. I have to say that it's probably an area where the government hasn't delivered enough to people in the provinces, particularly those in the central North Island who are still suffering massive energy hardship issues. The other thing that was interesting was Mihi asked her if she knew of the 529 Kiwi build homes that had been built, how many had been bought by Māori, and she didn't have the number on her at the time, but we got a follow-up email from her office to say only 5%, which is well below what their target was.
Well, that's a good answer to, but that's your sort of almost political level answer. Anyway, the Labor tax policy is going to come out this week, which is interesting, I think. Maybe I don't know when exactly, but it's definitely happening this week, I'm told. There's a big debt building up, right? Like, that is going to be one of the themes of the election. It's heading towards 47% of GDP in a decade, you know? Will Labor
solve that with a bit of growth?
Well, that's it. I mean, like, part of Paul Goldsmith's solution is that he's going to do super fast growth. And it's kind of, I mean, you know, that's a perennial politician's claim, right? We're just going to grow faster. But Labor also polling over 50%, seemingly unstoppable. Centre left party. The highest tax rate in New Zealand is still, like, what is it,
33%? 33%
over $70,000. Is this the moment that Grant Robertson says, let's do a 140, 150, over that rate, bump it up? It seems like, obviously, National want to turn it into a tax election.
Mm.
But would it even be that brave? Surely it's the time to do it.
Morally, it's the right thing to do. And it would be in keeping with Australia, where I think, is it 45% is their
top tax rate?
Tax rate. But will they actually do it? Probably not. They won't want to alienate the voters that sit in that tax bracket, even though it's really what they should do. And let's be honest, I think after capital gains tax, we've seen that Labor will back down when they feel the pressure. So
they
might put out one tomorrow saying that they'll raise it to 45, but will it still be their policy come election day? Who knows? I mean, we had the tax working group who recommended that we instate a capital gains tax. Labor chickened out.
Now
it's off the table for her entire leadership. They don't have a sparkling track record, do they, when it comes to dealing with tax?
It's been like a giant thorn in the side of Labor Party for at least the last decade of going into elections as tax policy. Do you think that something might happen there, Ben?
The obvious answer is a new top tax bracket, maybe around 39 cents or so, and that would kick in, you would assume, at a relatively high level. Most people believe that high income earners should be taxed more.
That's right.
What people disagree on is what is a high income earner? And it's usually about 20 grand more than you earn. And so in order to not alienate, you know, a vast swathe of voters, you know, I think about 10% of the country earns people in employment earn over 100 grand. If they bump it up to, you know, 130 grand or so, you're catching a very small number of people.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you would think that they would compensate for that by maybe moving up that 33 cent bracket a little bit to allow, you know, middle income earners to keep more of their pay.
Because so those have been sliding
70K
over time.
doesn't go very far in Auckland.
Yeah, that's right. And so this issue of bracket creep, which is actually how you get all the money out of tax increases. Originally, when the top tax rate was put up to 39 cents under the last Labor government, it was at $60,000 was the cutoff. And by the end of their 9 years, a huge number of people were in that top tax bracket, you know, again, only on that marginal rate above 60 grand that they earned, but who had not expected to be, you know, high income earners by Helen Clark's definition. If you put it up to about, you know, 110, 120 grand, you'll catch quite a few people, and over the next 10 years, you'll probably double that amount as people, yep, you know, start coming into that bracket. But, in you know, the strategy presumably would be to offset that with tax, with, you know, moving the brackets at the lower rate, so that, you know, for the first 10 grand or so in that top tax bracket, you're still in a bit of a wash in terms
so
of
So if you offset some of that, as you say, so that the bracket's more sort of reasonably reflect what they were intended to when they were created, and then you create a 130k new rate of 39.40 cents, I honestly don't see that that many people would be upset about it. I see that you would frame it as everybody has to make some small sacrifice at this time. It's a really difficult time. I don't think there are that many people that would be upset by that.
Probably page. Not, but I think the National Party have been very effective at getting at, you know, drumming up hysteria around Labor's tax policy, and they'd probably be very good at getting them to back down from it. I think if we are going to see any significant tax reform after the election, it will be relying on the Greens to get back in the into Parliament and be form a coalition with Labor to see some significant change in terms of income tax, because it doesn't sound like Labor have much of an appetite for it.
National launched their campaign in South Auckland on Sunday, I think it is. What do you think, Ben, will be the sort of headline pitch? We had Jacinda Ardern at the launch on Saturday, christen it the COVID election, which I think I wrote this in the piece after going along, that it seems like at once both a truism. I mean, of course it is. And also a strategy, you know, a bit of messaging, that it wraps everything up in that, cuts everything else out and closes it down. What do you do if you are advising Judith Collins, head of Sunday? What is it? I mean, the obvious response is the economy election, but maybe it's the jobs election. How do you deal with this problem?
The jobs election is a really tough pitch now because of those unemployment figures that came out last week. Now, obviously, those figures aren't true in the sense that we would understand them to be true, in that the unemployment rate compared with 3 months ago is certainly not lower than it was. Yeah. There are not fewer people working
for jobs. There
are
fewer people in work.
There are far fewer people in work. A truer reflection of the unemployment rate would be about 6.5%. But the stat is the stat, which is 4% unemployment, and Labor will be clinging on to that throughout the campaign. As Matthew Hooden, my former colleague, said in his recently revived Herald column.
That was funny, wasn't it? I don't know where he went. Was he just going on one of his skiing holidays?
I haven't seen him. What? I think he's studying. He
disappeared from all his
spots. But he's back.
Spots, and then he's back, and that all seems fine.
Just woke up from a strange dream.
Yeah, that's good. Anyway.
We live in a gig economy. You know, people come in and out of jobs. That's, you know, seamless transition. Mm-hmm. This is the future of work that Labor promised. So, you know, he said that if, National can say, well, look, you know, the unemployment figures only look rosy because the government is artificially keeping up employment with their wage subsidy. And then the government says, yes. Yes, that's right. We did that.
Yeah.
So that's harder. So, you know, then you go on to better economy. I mean, pretty much every economist is predicting a, you know, relatively sharp downturn coming around near the end of the year, because we've bounced back pretty strongly from the the lockdown phase, but now we've got to deal with the entire world going to dog shit on our doorstep, and the lack of foreign visitors for tourism, for foreign students. National right now are doing that kind of strategy of turning the question back on the government. you know, saying, well, why the Cook Islands being opened for a travel bubble in December instead of October? Why are we hearing about the second wave? But that's not a strong narrative. You know, this isn't question time. They can't put the government on the spot. The government has a narrative and National lead their own narrative. Mm. It's not totally clear to me what that is right now. I would have thought that they would be leaning into the government preparing people for a second wave, that they would have been saying, look, the government has done a good job treading water, but they know that we can't keep this virus out forever. They know that their border is inadequate. They know that the economy isn't going into a tailspin, and they're just preparing us for the worst.
I think that's what they think they're doing. Like, I feel, you know, the Jerry Brownlee stuff is quite intriguing, isn't it? And he's basically going, what aren't they telling us? what are they hiding? I mean, he's kind of almost going full Merv on it with his level of, I mean, it is something to listen to,
his
right?
His interview on Morning Report was absolutely bizarre. And frankly, I think any reasonable-minded New Zealander who listened to that interview would be fearful of what would happen if Jerry was in charge of the border, because the whole, what do we need masks for anyway? Why would we even need masks? It's, like, it's called preparing for the worst case scenario.
Yeah,
but it seemed to lack common sense. And like Ben said, it's just, wouldn't you lean in rather than approach it the way he did? It was
so
weird.
It seems, though, it's motivated by, I can only guess, We chatted about this after the pod last week. What happens if there is an outbreak during the election campaign when the government is sort of semi-suspended? You know, it's normal machinery. And you think that would be terrible for the incumbents. You think actually they probably wouldn't at the moment. Mm. So I can only guess. I can only guess that the thinking behind the what are they keeping from us, what are they telling us, why are they telling us masks, but also we're getting better, blah, 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 is to try and plant a flag, lay the groundwork in such case that might happen, so that they can then point back to that and say, you see, I don't think that's...
I think, too, it's just trying to drum up fear, which is a, you know, a powerful emotion when people vote. But I don't think it's going to be successful, because I think people are more scared of getting coronavirus than they are about paranoia about what we're not being told by the government.
It's hard, right? But I mean, you listen to Michael Baker, I think I've heard him use this analogy, various people have, but it's that whole, we're 5 minutes into an 80-minute rugby game, and yes, you know, the shape has been established and things are looking good, but there's a long way to go, this is far from victory, blah, blah, blah. It sort of feels like a statesperson like series of addresses on that front might be a bit more impactful.
I would have thought so. And if you're trying to undermine the government's COVID response, you just embrace the preparation for level two coming back. You say the government knows it can't keep this out. The government knows that it's either going to tank our economy or let people in with our inadequate borders, because they still haven't got contact tracing right. They still haven't got the border secure. You know, I'm not saying any of these things are necessarily true, but there are enough questions that you could run that line as an opposition. Mm. So the lack of clarity around their messaging is what's really confused me. I actually couldn't follow Jerry's interview on RNZ. I didn't understand what he was trying to say.
Well,
to mention, too, that it's also off message with what Judith Collins said when she took over the leadership, and Muller, that they weren't going to be doing oppositional politics for opposition sake. So,
yeah, I think that goes out the window in an election campaign.
True.
In Parliament, you've got this collegiality, you're working together to create better laws, you're holding the government to account, but you're also supporting the good things. Right now, it's just a grab for power between largely the two major parties. Mm. So I don't think that they can be held responsible for any or blamed for
there's
making
also,
an opposition.
Though,
an
there's
election.
Also unquestionably in Jerry Brownlee a fire burning about Radio New Zealand. I mean, he just viscerally loathes it with every inch of his being. And, you know, the Jerry mania that I mentioned earlier, it's relentlessly grouchy, you know, like that's the style.
Jerry Brownlee did an amazing job with the reconstruction of Christchurch. You know, the voices that are loudest tend to criticize him. But when you actually look at the numbers, there are 180,000 houses that were either destroyed or seriously, seriously damaged. They put in place a managed repair program that I think there are 7,000 homes which still have outstanding issues. Now, in absolute numbers, of course, that's a lot of people whose lives are affected, who have got issues and who are unhappy with the situation. As a percentage, it's less than 5% of a massive, massive reconstruction program. Somebody was telling me that the brands, the building association, say that for new builds on houses, there's about an 80% callback rate in terms of dissatisfaction with the work done. Here, there's about a 5% on the reconstruction of an entire city. Jerry led that process. He was living in Christchurch during that process, dealing with all of the critics, dealing with the Christchurch priests who, you know, looked out onto the ruined city and, you know, and were very critical and negative during that whole time. And great, I think that period did kill a bit of Jerry Brownlee's joie de vivre, if you will.
The bow tie, remember that when he was, there's that great photo of him not doing karaoke because it would have been many decades before karaoke was invented, but that black and white photo of the young Jerry Brownlee singing.
He's a good singer.
Baritone?
Yes, there are many, many different opinions about Brownlee's management of the Christchurch recovery. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt that he's proven himself over the years in many regards to be a very capable politician. Let's talk about Auckland Central. And at last we have a full roster of candidates with the election last night, the selection last night, beg your pardon, of Emma Mallow, which is, I mean, a great name straight off the bat, to replace Nikki Kaye, who stood down in the great Mueller catastrophe. Seems like a pretty smart, I don't know. Seems like a pretty, you know, a young liberal woman. Seems like what the doctor ordered for National Party, Ben Thomas. What's your
Nikki Kaye 2.0.
She said she's not Nikki Kaye 2.0. So
well, I'm a political expert, and she's Nikki Kaye 2.0.
Okay.
I
met Nikki can't surf lifesave though, and Emma can. And
no, I think Nikki can. Nikki can do triathlons.
But does she? and is Emma as green or as Auntie Nikki, or is she mellow yellow?
Oh, this terrible stench is just rippling through the room.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-Off. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spin-Off member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.